Barbecue has never been easier with the Barbecue Guru. The Barbecue Guru is a temperature control and monitor for all pits, charcoal, wood, electric, your pit. It easily attaches to any smoker or pit and gives you simple, trouble-free control of your temperatures so you can make championship-quality barbecue every time and all the time. And it's location-free. Take it anywhere. This amazing breakthrough in barbecue technology is a microprocessor-controlled draft system that uses temperature monitors and a small fan to keep your temperatures constant. The Stainless Steel Guru Pit Minder gives you a choice of controls from 90 to 370 degrees. So cold smoking, pepper drying, making cheese or jerky, or fabulous briskets and ribs is nothing short of effortless. The ProCom 4 lets you monitor your pit from up to 600 feet away, and there's more. Check out the full line of products and accessories for the future of barbecue with new items on the way. Visit thebarbecueguru.com. That's www.thebbqguru.com. Or call 1-800-288-GURU.
Hi, this is Scotty DeCue of Northern Vermont, and you're locked in to the Barbecue For You show.
Coming up next on the Barbecue For You show.
Ray, tell us something about yourself that we might not know about you.
Oh, gee. You know, my life is pretty much on my shirt sleeve at this point. I don't know.
Welcome to the Barbecue For You show, the show where we talk about all things important to the world of barbecue. From big-name interviews to advice on cooking briskets and ribs, you'll find it right here on the Barbecue For You show. If you're interested in learning more about barbecue, log on to our website at www.bbq-4-u.com. Get connected to the best forum on the internet. And now, here's your program host, Greg Rimpey.
Thank you, Jim Morgan. Welcome, everybody, to the Barbecue For You show. Wherever you are across this great country of ours, certainly appreciate you taking time out to join me. My guest tonight is about to become a three-time author. He also holds a barbecue competition cooking class that he tours around the country with. He's also the company chef for the Big Green Egg Cookers. I'm sure most of us have read his postings on other barbecue forums, read his books, or a combination of both. I am talking about Ray Lampe, a.k.a. Dr. Barbecue, and he joins me right now. Ray, welcome to the Barbecue For You show.
Hey, Greg. Good to see you.
Well, I wish I could see you, but I do appreciate you taking the time out to join me and talk to us for a little while tonight. First question right off the bat, could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I was born in Chicago, lived there most of my life, moved to the western suburbs early on, and lived right outside of Chicago. And 6 years ago, I moved down to Lakeland, Florida. That's where I live now. I'm 49 years old.
When and how did the name Dr. Barbecue come about?
Well, it was funny. In 1993, I bought a new van. I was really getting into the barbecue thing. I had started in 91, and I was really thinking I really wanted to do this more. So I bought a brand new van, and in Illinois, they just started having vanity license plates. And I sent in the little card, and I put on there, I really don't even remember what my three choices were. They were, it was Dr. Barbecue, obviously, and I think Mr. Barbecue and Barbecue Man or Barbecue King or something like that. And they sent me the Dr. Barbecue plate, and I hung it on my van, never thinking about the fact that this was going to be like a trademark name later on in life and the name of my business, basically. And it is all that now. And it just really wasn't any more. It was just an afterthought. It was just I wanted to get a barbecue-related vanity plate for my new van. And that's all it was about, you know, and it just grew from there.
So we shouldn't associate any type of arrogance along with Dr. Barbecue. It was just one of those things where you had a choice of three, and they just sent you one, and if it would have been something different, that would be the one that you have anyway.
That was it. I used to being arrogant all the time. I guess you got to have a little edge if you're going to walk around being called Dr. Barbecue, but it wasn't intended to try and pass myself off as any sort of medical doctor or anything. I like to tell people I'm technically pre-med.
If we're taking a look at you, you can't deny the fact that you got a big flat top going and you have a big goatee Fu Manchu type. Is that a look that you have kind of crafted and grown throughout the years, or is this just you being you?
It's actually a Chicago truck driver look. I get that a lot. People, somebody told me one day, if you don't have a stylist, you're doing a heck of a job. And I don't have a stylist, believe me. It's when you drive a truck in the city in Chicago, you go into some rough neighborhoods, and it's kind of a crazy job. And so if you look a little bit nutty, it's a pretty good idea. So it's just, I looked a little nutty to begin with. So the flat top, a friend of mine got a flat top, probably 15 years ago, before anybody had started wearing them. We were all kind of transitioning from long hair. And I just it really looked good. I liked it. So I went and got one myself. And the goatee, I don't know how, I had a goatee since I was about 17 when I could first grow one. My high school graduation picture, I had a goatee. I've always had one of them. But then I just started letting it grow one day. And like I said, it was just kind of a scary truck driver look. But it transitioned well to being a barbecue man. The crazy truck driver look and the barbecue man look are pretty similar. So it worked out. But no, by no means was it intended to be some sort of crafted, business look. This is just me, man. This is just what I look like.
You've written two books. You have another one coming out in May of 2007, I believe. Do you find it therapeutic to author these things, or is it just something else that you wanted to get into?
No, I don't know about therapeutic. At this point, it's a job for me. Think about what I just said. The trucking business was done. I was a 43-year-old man with, nothing to do. My 25-year career had dried up and gone away, and the only other thing I really knew how to do is cook barbecue. And I didn't want to go in the restaurant business. I had seen too many people fail, and even the ones that were successful were pretty miserable, because they were just stuck in a little storefront their whole life. So I didn't really want to do that. I was selling barbecue in a parking lot down here, and the offer came to write a barbecue cookbook for a real publisher in New York. And what I liked about it was I wasn't really force-fitting it. I wasn't begging somebody to do it. I wasn't really hunting it down. It had sort of come to me, so it seemed like a good idea. And once I started doing it, the first book, it was a lot of fun. It was really just, I like to tell people, the book was already written. But it was in my head. I just needed to type it out because it was just about 20 years of what I had been doing with my life. I had started writing, I wrote the book in, I think, 2003, and I had been doing the barbecue thing since 1982. So I had 20 years of doing this. And I had a lot of stories and a lot of experiences. And plus, I had learned how to cook pretty good, and I had a lot of experience in cooking different ways. So the first book was really just kind of fun. It was really just writing down a bunch of experiences. Now, the second book and subsequently the third book, and hopefully some more books after that, I've had to learn how to be an author, and it's been a lot of fun. Turned out, I guess I had a little bit of ability for it that I didn't realize. And of course, I had all the stories, but to me, they were just old bar stories. You would have heard these stories in the Garv Inn there in Berwyn for many years, and all of a sudden I was writing them down and getting paid for it. And for me, it's just part of what I do. I get to travel about 8 months of the year promoting barbecue and the books and, Green Egg and everything else that I'm involved in. And I come home for the winter, and this is what I do. I write a book. I'm writing one right now, and that's what I do. So it's just a job for me. It's kind of wild how I change gears. If you saw me now, my hair's all grown out long. I haven't shaved in about a week, I'm in my office, which looks like a disaster. It looks like Andy Rooney's office, and this is what my life is for 4 months. And then the other 8 months, I'm living in hotels all around the country.
Is it fair to say that then the first book was your favorite because it was something that was in your head and you just had to get it out, versus the other two being more of a job, or is that not necessarily a fair statement?
No, I don't think so. Not necessarily for me. So far, the first one has sold better than the second one. Third one's not out yet. So I think I like to think that the people that who bought the first one are all going to get around to buying the second one. So I don't consider it to be lacking behind. No, I don't have a favorite. They're different for me, that's for sure. The first one, it's fun because it really was a bunch of old stories. But the second one is kind of, means a lot to me because I'm very proud of the fact that I was able to then turn around and write a book that needed to be written as opposed to just writing down my stories, I think we did a great job with the second book. I think it's a lot of fun. And the third one, I'm really excited about. So, I don't necessarily have a favorite. It's kind of like kids, They're all a little bit different. You like them all.
Ray, tell us about Dr. Barbecue's real deal cooking classes and how you feel they differ from ones that are existing out there.
Well, the cooking classes really was started out of necessity. I was down here selling barbecue. The first step of the moving from Chicago and becoming a barbecue man was to come on down here. I moved to Florida. I drove my truck my last day on December 29th, January 10th. I was in Florida. And I had a trailer, a concession trailer, so I got myself a license, and I started selling barbecue in the parking lot. Well, nice idea. It looks so, you know, talk about looking glamorous. Boy, that's everybody's dream job. But the truth is, you just, you know, you make money some days and you don't on other days. When it rains, nobody comes to buy barbecue from the man in the trailer in the parking lot. You know, they go to the drive-thru and stuff. And it just was, financially, it wasn't going that well. And so I decided I needed to do something different. And I started doing it, I guess it's about 5 or 6 years ago now, and there really wasn't very many people doing it at the time. I think Paul was the only guy even doing it at the time. And I had the background and I had the knowledge. There was no question about it. And I'd always been real active on the internet. So I decided I was going to throw my hat in the ring and teach some of these cooking classes, because it was growing. I mean, not as rabid as it is now, but there was a lot of people really interested in the competition thing. And there just wasn't a lot of information out there, you know, and still really isn't. There's a lot more. The internet now has changed a lot of that, but there still really isn't a lot of that, you know, and the people are really hungry for it. My class is to talk about the actual content. I really go through it like a contest. You know, we do everything we do at a contest. I start at noon on the day of, you know, what would be Friday at most contests, and sometimes it's Friday, sometimes it's Saturday in the classes, and we start setting up at noon like I typically would at a contest, and at 3 o'clock we start prepping the food, which is pretty much my schedule at a contest as well. And I will prep my brisket, and then I'll have someone prep there. Everybody cooks all four categories. I'll have someone else prep their brisket in front of the class, and then everyone goes back to their station, and I'll walk around and try and help each one of them to get their brisket prepped. And then we go through the same motion for all four meats to get them prepped. Then we all cook all night. I stay right there with them cooking all night, just like I would at a contest. And in the morning, the only thing in the morning, we change the order. Whatever's ready first. We may do brisket first at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and then pork, and then chicken, and then ribs, depending on how it all falls. But it's really walking through all the steps of a contest. I mean, I couldn't do it more authentically, and that's how I like to do it. I understand the appeal of starting at 7 in the morning and being done at 7 at night, but the truth is, you can't cook a 15-hour brisket in 10 hours.
Ray, when did you start competing in barbecue competitions?
I did my first rib cook-off in 1982. A friend of mine named Bruce Romanek was signed up for Mike Royko, the old columnist that was in Chicago. Oh, he started picking a fight with his neighbor about who cooked the better ribs, and I think it was all staged just to build up to having this event. And so Mike was going to cook against his neighbor, and then he decided he would have a cook-off with everybody else that wanted to come as well. Well, little did they know, 400 people showed up to cook, or signed up to cook, and they had it in Grant Park in Chicago, which is right where the ball fields are, right between the city and the lake. Beautiful place to have it. And, you know, it was 1982. Things were a little different then. They let us all drive in and set up our stuff and bring our own beer, and it was just a raging party. We had a great time. It was really something. The judges were pretty much all loaded, and it really wasn't very organized judging. You know, nobody knew what to make of this. It goes back very early in the world of competition barbecue, frankly. American Royal goes back before that, but Jack Daniels didn't start for another 7 years after that. Memphis and May probably was about that time. You know, this was very early in the world of competition barbecue. There were no sanctioning, you know, well, I guess there was, but it was pretty hard to find any way you could have run this thing properly. So it was just all politicians and restaurateurs, and all they were all partying. So anyway, that was my first experience. Now, I had never really cooked any ribs before, but I did a little bit of research and cooked some good ribs that day. And I did that for quite a few years. And then in 1991, they quit having that. But ironically, I saw in the paper right after that the first Illinois State Championship sanctioned by KCBS was going to be held that year in a place called West Chicago, which wasn't far from my house. Now, I didn't even know what KCBS was at the time. And, well, frankly, KCBS started in 1986, so I guess they were 85. So they were very new, too. So, I mean, it goes back a long ways. There's very few people I know that cooked a contest before 1982 that are still around. One of the few is Bill Milroy, because they were doing it down in Texas. Bill goes back into about 1977 that he remembers cooking a contest, but that's pretty much unheard of, you know. There's not many people that have been doing it longer than me. Now, granted, those were informal rib cook-offs, but, You know, the bottom line is I was cooking a barbecue for money in 1982.
Now, if you look back in your history, I mean, you've obviously amassed a few hundred awards through your various competitions. Is there a particular award that stands out to you that you're most proud of?
I guess. I mean, I won Butt to Butt, which is an invitational pork cook-off in Shannon, Illinois. And I won it the first year, and it wasn't that big of a deal. Nobody really knew what it was. However, Mike Lake's the guy up there that runs it, and he invited the pork champion from the American Royal Invitational and Jack Daniels and the KCBS Pork Team of the Year and a few other places. So it was all the big guns that came up there. And then the second, I won it the first year, and then I won it again the second year, which again, a whole another wave of them, another half a dozen of these badass pork cooks came up there, and I beat them all again. And I'm real proud of that. I'm still the only guy that's ever won two of those. I've been third at the American Royal Open. I'm pretty proud of that. I've been fourth at the American Royal Invitational, which you don't get anything for that, but it's a pretty prestigious place to be. So, I mean, I don't have the greatest, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's got 10 world championships, but man, I've been in the top 10 and the top 5 and a whole bunch of world championships, and I would say I'm proud of my career records more than any one in particular.
Ray, if you don't mind, we're going to change it up a little bit. I've had some members on my forum submit some questions that they wanted me to read and get your answers from. So if you're ready for that, we'll go ahead and blast them off.
Uh-oh, it could be trouble now, but yeah, I'm ready.
Ray, this question is from Uncle Bubba in Youngstown, Ohio. He writes, "Dear Ray, how long do you rub your meat before putting them on? Yes, I'm serious. There are some who believe in rubbing your meat many hours before you put them on, and some who believe you do it right before you put on. He just was anxious to hear your opinion and from your experience if there's any difference between doing it in a longer or a shorter phase."
Well, I don't see any value to doing it long before. Chicken and ribs I do right at the last minute. I generally marinate my chicken, and then the seasoning will go on right at the end. Just so we're straight, I don't spend a lot of time rubbing the meat in on anything. I sprinkle it on and I put it on the cooker. My chicken, you know, it just gets seasoned at the last minute. And my ribs, I specifically do not season them ahead of time, and the chicken also, because these small pieces of meat like this, there's a lot of salt and a lot of sugar in any barbecue rub. And if you leave it on a small piece of meat like that for too long, it begins to cure the meat. I mean, if you get some ribs that are tasting a little bit hammy, a lot of times that's what happened. You put the rub on too long, and the salt and the sugar begins to cure the meat. And because it's just a little piece of meat, it begins to get hammy. So I specifically don't with those. As far as the butts and briskets, for me, I really do it. It's mainly a matter of convenience. You know, if I've got to fire up my cooker at 5 o'clock in the morning and put on a bunch of stuff, I'll probably rub the stuff the night before, just for the sake of not having to make a mess at 4:30 in the morning to get the stuff on. However, if it's going on at 8 o'clock at night, I'll usually just put the rub on, let it sit up till it gets tacky, make sure it's all stuck on good, and put it on. I don't see any value in putting it on the night, you know, any specific long time ahead of time.
Next question is from Nick P. from Long Island, New York. Writes, "Dear Ray, do you inject, and do you think that it affects the cook time as far as will it cook faster or slower if you inject?"
I do inject. I inject my briskets and my pork these days for competition. I'm not a big fan of it necessarily. For pork specifically, I prefer it just put some rub on it and cook it for if I'm actually going to eat it. However, for competition these days, I believe that you have to really, you just got to do everything you can to season and flavor the meat. And so I believe in it very much for competition. As far as cook time, I don't know. I don't sit and watch the clock when I'm cooking. You know, I put it on and just let it cook, and it's going to take a long time. And I don't know. You know, maybe my butts are taking an hour or more or less since I started injecting. I haven't noticed. I don't know.
Next question is from Bruce B. out of Utica, Michigan. He writes, "If you could wave your magic wand, what would the KCBS look like as an organization in the next 5 years?
Oh, God, what a loaded question this is. I was on the board for a year and a half, and I haven't been now for about a year and a half. And I guess I'd just like to see them tighten up all the little loose ends. There's just a lot of little loose ends that need to be tightened up. Basically, KCBS is set up to be a barbecue contest sanctioning body, which means they officiate the contest. Well, they're doing a real good job of that. I don't happen to think the scoring program and the scoring, well, the program is antique and needs to be updated, but that's going to get done sooner or later, and it'll be done. The one that they're using is functioning. The actual scoring system, I don't happen to think it's broke. I think guys are just, like I was saying about how guys are really getting into this now. And, you know, I saw this in Plant City a few weeks ago when I was there. There's so many guys now that have really come to the table. You know, they've spent good money, bought top-notch equipment. They've read all the books. They've taken all the classes. They're cooking really good food. They've got all the proper equipment, all the proper ingredients. They're cooking great food. But when you're at a contest like that, there were, I think, 51 KCBS teams. 20 of these teams are really that good. You know, you've got the old ones, new ones, and a couple of sleepers in there, and you've got 20 really great teams. You know, you look down the line that day, and there was myself and Bad Byron and John and Kathy Swift and Kevin from Home Barbecue and Myron Mixon and Fast Eddie and on and on and on. And some of these new guys, Joe Amore and Bill and the Dixie Chicks, not that new, but my gosh, these are some quality teams. Problem is, we can't all win. And somehow it's all got to get sorted out. And you know, out of those 20 guys that I saw that day that I thought were really the cream of the crop, 19 of them weren't going to win. And a dozen of them were going to be disappointed, frankly. And that's how it went, and it's really unfortunate. But I don't think there's anything wrong. I think it's got to be sorted out somehow. Not everybody could win that day, you know, and whether it gets sorted out, I don't happen to think the scoring system is in that bad a shape. I think maybe KCBS needs to have some nads to say that, to say, listen, we think this is working pretty good, and we're going to go with it. So I'd like to see some better leadership. But all in all, I don't think it's all that bad, because I think we need to just understand what it is. I think they need to be square about what they really are, you know, like Jack Daniels and the American Royal and Great American, the three big cook-offs that they're involved with. Well, KCBS does not run these cook-offs. They don't claim to. They don't have anything to do with it. But yet they leave this whole gray area where it's sort of misunderstood whether or not they're part of it or not. I think they need to just separate themselves from it and say, no, we don't involve ourselves with these. We come there and we officiate them. Unless it's a problem with the officiating, we're not involved. And frankly, the officiating is going pretty darn well. So I guess I'd just like to see them be a little bit more clear about what they are doing. And frankly, I think they're going along pretty good.
Next question is from the self-proclaimed darling of the barbecue community, Captain Morgan. He writes, Dear Ray, want your thoughts on a moist cooking environment. Do you feel that differs or differing from a dry one, for example, using a water pan versus an electric smoker?
Is he a real captain?
Captain in his mind.
See, there's no such thing as pre-med for a captain. I do not like to cook with water. I never have. I never do. I'll tell you a secret. I was in Memphis last year at the cooking in the All-Star Barbecue Showdown, and the cooker we drew that day was the Backwoods, and I think his name's Mike McGowan, the guy that owns Backwoods. Nice guy, and those cookers are really nice, but I don't like cooking with water. So I asked him, I said, well, how will it cook with no water? He said, well, I don't know. Nobody's ever tried it. I said, well, hang on to your hat, because I'm about to do that. Right. But all I was cooking was turkey and chicken, and I cut them all up. So I put a foil pan in there to catch the drift things, but there wasn't a whole lot. It was just a couple turkeys and a couple chickens, so it wasn't an issue. But, I mean, that's how much I dislike cooking with water. For me, it just doesn't work for me. I like to see the bark develop over a long period of time, and I don't like cooking with water. I got it. You can see me at the end of the year in the final of the TV show fighting with Myron Mixon because I didn't want to put water in his big cooker. And of course, you know, I mean, clearly I'm wrong because Myron, he said what he says to me at one point is, yeah, like it doesn't work with water in it. And right. Clearly Myron has won everything there is to win with water.
Right.
But, you know, we just cook different. Myron, the way Myron cooks, you need to have water in there because he cooks so hot. I don't cook that way, so I don't like to cook with water at all. I have this vision that it washes a lot of the crap out of the air and deposits it on my meat. You know, it sort of rains on it and washes that creosote type stuff down on my meat. Now, this is one of those things that I can't really justify and, you know, identify as being real or anything, but it's, you know, we've all got those things in our mind that we just sort of, you know, think about.
Next question is from Larry Wolf, Bealeton, Virginia. This looks like a one question broken down into four parts, so bear with me. The first part of this is, do you bring meat to room temperature before cooking, or do you put them on right out of the refrigerator?
No, I do not. I put it on right out of the refrigerator, and the main reason is for the to encourage a smoke ring. I don't like having my meat laying around. Hell, I'm usually cooking in a parking lot or a field somewhere, and I don't really like the idea of having my meat laying around. But I also... I know that the smoke ring is enhanced if I put my meat on colder, and so I like to do that, especially when I was cooking on a pellet cooker. Pellet cookers are not the greatest for ring, so I always found that I wanted to give myself every advantage possible, so I always would put my meat on cold, and that's the main reason I do it. My chicken, I let the chicken sit out for about a half hour because the same chemical reaction that creates a red smoke ring on a brisket or a pork butt is the same reaction that creates that red bone effect in chicken. So obviously we don't want it in chicken, so I try and let the meat warm up a little bit to discourage that. Now, I know that a lot of people have this vision of this 40-degree piece of meat going into a 225-degree cooker and being shocked into beef jerkiness, you know, by this horrible temperature change from 40 to 225. However, they feel that if you let the meat warm up to 72, that won't happen. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I mean, that hell, my meat's warmed up to 72 probably in about the first 15 minutes it's in the cooker, and it's a problem to solve. Also, when I look at my meat after 15 minutes, it's not all seized up. It's just kind of laying there.
Right.
Looking a lot like it did when I put it in there. So I think that that's a nice idea, but it's just not true.
Right out of the refrigerator is just more or less to encourage a better smoke ring and no other preference as far as that's concerned.
And food safety.
Right. At any point during the cook, other than holding, are you foiling? And I know you said that you started to do that with your briskets, but you don't do that with ribs or anything
ribs
else?
Ribs I foil for sure. Ribs is definitely part of the process. I look at my ribs as a two-part cooking process. The first part is to get them colored up and flavored up. And once they look great, then I'll wrap them, and the second part is to tenderize them. So ribs I will always, it's definitely part of the equation to wrap them. Pork and brisket, I, for years, did not wrap them at all on the cooker unless I was in a hurry. I wrap them when they come off, and the briskets always go in the ice chest or Cambro to stay resting for a long time, at least 2 hours and up to even six, and I'm happy with that. The pork, I could take it or leave it. If it's, I like to let it sit for an hour or so, but if it just comes off towards the end, I'm okay with it too. I like to get it wrapped and let it rest for a little while, though, because for competition, I don't want the bark to be too crunchy. I want my bark to be soft because I always worry about judge. So a judge has got to judge this thing on tenderness. Well, if he's got a crunchy piece of bark, how does he judge that as appropriately tender?
Right.
You know, I always worry about getting a bad score because of something like that. So I like to have it wrapped up at least for a little while. So, but these days I've taken to basically whenever I get up in the morning. When I get up in the morning at 6:30 or 7, and my briskets and my butts, usually I've taken to wrapping them then. And usually they're usually in the 170s at that point. And they're not going to get a whole lot more flavor at that point. They're pretty in pretty good shape. Might as well just get them done.
Fourth and final part of the question, and this seems to be a hot debate on any barbecue forum that you go on: briskets fat side up or fat side down?
I cook them fat side down for sure these days. I think it depends what kind of cooker you got. If you've got radiant heat coming from below, like my Green Egg does, my Jedmaster did, my pellet cooker does, then fat side down for sure. If you're cooking on an offset where a lot of times the heat is really more intense on up above than it is below, then I think fat up or maybe half and half. But all these upright cookers where the heat is coming from below, I like to have the fat headed down to shield the meat. The concept of that fat you know, basting its way through the meat is just BS. It just doesn't work like that. It runs off. I sort of picture it as the brisket is sitting in this this bowl of melted fat, and that sounds pretty good to me.
Right.
You know, and frankly, you know, any cooker that's got the heat coming from the bottom, why would you put that exposed part, you know, that piece, the bottom meat part that doesn't have any fat on it at all? It doesn't make any sense to me to turn that towards the fire.
All right, we're going to switch gears back. Ray, you write a column for Fiery Food magazines. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I sure do. It's an Ask Dr. Barbecue column. Bruce Ring, who used to live up in Iowa, Bruce started the Barbecuer magazine years ago. I don't know, probably late 90s. And it was a really nice idea. You know, he really tried to make it a nice full-color magazine about barbecue and wrote some nice articles and stuff. And actually, it was successful. Bruce just had a change in career. Bruce was a banker in Iowa, and he had an opportunity to move back to, I think it's Jefferson City down there in Missouri, and buy the Zesto that he had worked at when he was a kid. And what he did was he bought it, and he incorporated some barbecue onto the menu, and he's down there, and he's real happy doing it. I think he might even have two of them now. And when he changed, though, when he left to Iowa, you know, and changed careers, he needed to leave the magazine behind. And it just wasn't bad, but it wasn't hugely successful. He didn't have anything really of any great value to sell. So he left it behind. Now, the publishers up there, Pioneer, they actually published it for a little while. But anyway, when Bruce was doing the magazine, I called him up one day, and I said, hey, I want to do the Ask Dr. Barbecue column. And he said, yeah, sure. He said, you know, I can't really pay you much, but I'd love to have it. So we did it, and you know, in the early days, nobody ever sent any questions. We basically made them up most of the time.
Right.
And it was fun. I enjoyed doing it, and Bruce, you know, Bruce gave me a few bucks when he could, and bought me my first chef jackets that had the flames on the collar and stuff, and it was a fun thing to do. But anyway, when Bruce quit, I thought he was going to fold the magazine up, and so I said, well, right, that's fine, and I called Dave DeWitt out there. Dave runs the Fiery Food Show and the SCOVI Awards, and is probably the foremost expert in the United States on chili peppers. Dave said, yeah, you know, I was looking for something to do. I didn't know Dave before, but I called him up, introduced myself, and I said, yeah, I'm looking for some more barbecue content anyway. That sounds pretty good. You know, I think we'll do this. And so Dave actually offered to pay me for it, which was very nice. I didn't tell him at the time. He'll know now that Bruce wasn't paying me. But anyway, it was my product. You know, I moved it over there to Dave's magazine. And, well, the barbecue actually got saved, but it was too late. I had already moved on to go do this with Dave. Well, ultimately, down the road, Dave got together with the folks up in Iowa, and the two have combined, and it's now Fiery Foods and Barbecue, and it's published by the folks up in Iowa. So I ended up back where I started. But it's been a great fit with Dave, because Dave is a big supporter. Dave's got a huge traffic on his website. His magazine's really popular, and now I get all the questions I can handle. It's great. You know, it's at fiery-foods.com is his website, and you look around for the Ask Dr. Barbecue, and I get all kinds of questions through there. And if you ever get a chance to go out to his show too, the Fiery Food Show in Albuquerque, it's really a blast. It's every March, and it's just an amazing show. It's packed with people, and you want to meet some eccentric folks, man, get out there, because they're all in the room. But successful, you know, it's successful in this Fiery Foods industry means, you know, you could wear pants with flames on them every day of your life.
And right.
I've never been to a trade show where they push the beer cart down the aisle so that the vendors could all get a beer while they were doing their thing.
Right.
And, it's just a party and a half. It's a fun show, because the industry is guys who have, you know, on the label of their successful products, they have, you know, asses that are on fire and stuff like that. So it's an industry like no other. It's really a lot of fun.
I did an interview 2 weeks ago with Leanne Whippin from Woodchicks Barbecue, and asked her about her participation in the National Barbecue Championship cook-off that took place on the Versus Network. You were also a participant in that. Why don't you give us your take on how that whole thing went down?
We sure had a lot of fun. I mean, Leanne and her sister Diane are just dolls. I like them a lot, and we spent a lot of time partying with them. They're good friends of Dirty Dicks, who was on my team, and we had a lot of fun with those girls. You know, they sure don't look like they are. They look so prissy, but they are barbecue cooks. You know, Leanne, the first one to jump in, and the last night we were there, they had a bunch of leftover meat, and we had to cook it, or they asked us if we would. And Leanne and Diane jump right in. I mean, they're so cute little girls. They jump right in to prep the barbecue with everybody else. So they're just a blast. I like them a lot. You know, it's kind of unfortunate how it went down, but hey, that was the game. You know, what they did with us was we had, from the time they gave us the lobster in that case, we had, I think it was an hour and a half. And in that hour and a half, we had to present the second category, which was the chicken. And then we had to go back and start working on our lobster. And then we had to go back up for the awarding of the chicken judging. And then we had to get back and get the stuff cooked. And that all had to happen in an hour and a half. And it was crazy. So, you know, you really were stretched. Is what do you do with the lobster? They wouldn't let our seconds go up and put the meat on the grill. So you had to make the decision to either put it on before or after you went up for the awards for the second category. And it was a tough call. I actually cooked mine for a while first, took it back to the table, and then finished it. And it worked out. Leanne didn't. Plus, she tried to cook them whole, and she just...
She didn't finish.
Yeah, I mean, I felt so bad for her. I didn't realize how bad it was until I saw it on TV. But it was just a judgment call. You know, you didn't know what was the right thing to do. And once you were there, you know, it's the challenge of the cooking and all that, but there's also the production of the TV show right in the middle of it. And she just, you know, I felt bad for her, but that was part of the game, you know. The same thing happened to me, you know, if you saw the semifinals, I had the opposite issue. I opened all my clams and oysters before because I knew it was going to be a problem and I wouldn't have time to do it at the end. And it probably hurt me, you know, because those clams and oysters were open for a while. And that probably was enough to, you know, they just didn't taste as good. Sarah waited till the last second, got hers all open. I'll give her credit. And probably beat me because hers tasted better. So it was a tough game, you know. It was very real. We had a lot of fun out there. You know, it was cool because... Yeah, you never been anywhere where you walk into the casino bar and there's Johnny Trigg and Myron Mixon and Fast Eddie and Mike Davis sitting at the bar, you know, and you know all the other people that were there. The you know, these were the barbecue elite. It was really a lot of fun, and you know, we all had some time to hang around, and some of us, you know, who didn't know each other got to know each other a little bit better, and it was really a treat to be part of, that's for sure. I sure hope to get to be able to do it again, because there was a lot of there was a whole back lot where there was a bunch of cookers piled up, and there was a cooler full of meat. So basically, if you felt like cooking something, they'd be happy to find something. You know, we fed the crew for the whole week. Whoever felt like cooking, just go right ahead and cook.
Right. So
the experience is great. What it brings to, you know, to take barbecue to that level. To see ourselves, you know, that first show, my God, they made me look like a rock star, you know. They toned it down a little bit after that, but it's so fun to be part of, you know. When you go back to the mid-90s and this thing was just starting to bloom, and we hoped that there would be days when this kind of stuff would happen. And then we got all the food TV coverage, but that stuff, you know, if you look at it, it's kind of the same old, same old. All it is they like to show the fires, they like to show some ribs getting charred up. They like to show some big redneck saying, "I'd tell you the secret, but then I'd have to kill you." You know, you get that in every show.
Right.
You know, the internet guys beat it up pretty bad that it's not perfect. However, I don't see any of them guys hosting a TV show. You know, let us know when your show is on, and we'll consider coming on there too. All in all, I think it's just a great thing all around.
Did you have any issues with the fact that they didn't supply typically trained judges to properly evaluate the food, or did you not care about that?
No, quite the contrary. I don't think any of us were really that ticked about it compared to last year, where we had Rocky and Ed and Bill was pretty good, but you know, some of the other judges, they slid in. You know, our hands were truly tied with Rocky and Ed, and I like them guys. Those guys are friends of mine, but they clearly were anti-barbecue sauce. They didn't want anything too sweet, too tender. God, some of the stuff, you know, you couldn't make it juicier, and they were claiming it was dry. Where these other folks were judging it fair and square. No, you know, it's funny how they've gotten beat up on the internet, but I don't think most of the competitors felt the same way. Chris sat them down and really drilled them for 3 or 4 hours. And like John Marcus said the other day, and somewhere on the internet, he they made a big mistake not filming that. He wishes they would have. So I believe those people were real prepared. I actually thought the judges were great, and I would welcome them to be, come back. And I had a win and a loss. I had I guess I won two or three out of the six categories I was involved in, but I felt I got judged fairly. My lobster was really good. My chicken was not very good. They scored them both accordingly. Eddie's lobster, they beat him up for some kind of commercial taste to it. Well, you know what it was? It was Ritz crackers. Eddie had made this stuffing using Ritz crackers, and they picked up on it right away and drilled him for
right.
it. Leanne's lobsters obviously were a disaster. I felt that the scores were pretty much justified everywhere I looked. I think that my clams and oysters, I was a little disappointed. They scored them so low and talked about them being so sweet. I still don't really understand why they thought they were so sweet. We didn't think we had put anything sweet in there. But, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I thought if the ones before me were just salty or savory and then they stuck mine in their mouth or something, I'm not mad about it. So, no, I think the judges were great, and I look forward to having them back again. It's funny. All the internet pundits, again, are calling for their heads. Meanwhile, we all kind of liked them.
So, going, if you were to go back next year, is there anything in particular that you would like to see change that would overall make it a better production and a better competition?
I'd like to see a referee. I think that, it gets busy with the production and stuff. And to eliminate any possible, issues that anybody had. I'm not saying anybody cheated. I don't know. I didn't have time to watch, to see what anybody was doing. There were some rumblings after the fact. And I just think if you just, get a cute girl and put her in a referee shirt and let her be the referee. It doesn't have to be anything mean or offensive, but let her just be in charge of that, do we need another cute girl? Is that what you're laughing about?
Right.
That could be an ugly dude too, I guess. But I guess that's one thing I'd like to see. As far as the format, I don't know. We thought it was a lot of fun. It was, there was a lot of downtime between the first, heck, we were out there that one day from 7 in the morning cooking pork till 1:30 in the morning. And then actually I had to turn around and come back the next day. And I'll actually tell you that we had been out there cooking for probably 28 out of 36 hours when I had to make the decisions on the clams and oysters. And, I'd like to think I'd have made better decisions if I'd have had a little more sleep.
Yeah.
And frankly, if I'd have won, I'd have had to come back again and cook the finals. It was just the luck of the draw. We were the last show filmed, the sixth show filmed, and we had the early start the next day. It was just, it was just the luck of the draw. I would rather have that than be cooking the first day, because the first day nobody really knew what was going on. It hadn't been done before. Everybody after the first show got to watch one, So the middle day, there was 3 days of this. The middle day would have been the best. I'll take the third one over the first, but it was pretty rough. It was a tough turnaround. I don't know. I liked it the way it was. I was a little, one thing I told Chris was, the first year we spent a lot of time talking to the camera and with Peggy and Chris, showing them what we were doing and explaining stuff to them. And they didn't have time to show it because it was only a half hour show. This year they had a 1 hour show where they actually had time to show some of that stuff, and we didn't have time to do it, frankly, because the way they filled it up, the actual filming was only like 3.5 hours. They shot us for 5 minutes in the morning, and then the actual filming was 3.5 hours, and I think it was 2:15 between the time you got the second category and the end of the show. So it was pretty bang bang once the cameras were on. And then frankly, they filled up the show with so much, they call them hero shots and stuff like that in the interviews, that they haven't had time to show much of that stuff anyway. So even if we had time to do it, I don't know. I try not to overanalyze it. I'm not a TV guy. I appreciate the opportunity to be part of it. I got a lot of faith in Chris and John. Like I said, I'm happy to be part of it. So I'm willing to just do whatever they want. I sort of look at it. I was talking to Myron about this, and he and I are on the same page about this. It's a job, I go there and I do my job. I try not to stir up too much trouble. I'll tell them what I think if there's something that's an issue, but in general, I try to just go there and do it as a job, try not to make anybody too mad, be there when they ask me to be there, do what they want me to do, try to, talk to the camera as much as I can, try to be entertaining a little bit and have some fun and try and cook well And so I'm good with it. When are we starting again?
Ray, tell us something about yourself that we might not know about you.
Oh, gee. You know, my life is pretty much on my shirt sleeve at this point. I don't know.
Final question, Ray. Are you actively trying to leave any type of stamp or legacy behind in the barbecue community?
No, I'm just trying to make a living. It's fun to be part of it and to be doing stuff that, you know, I enjoy doing stuff that nobody else is doing and you know, being I've always been sort of an entrepreneurial type of a guy, so, you know, getting a good sponsored deal with a cooker company is something I really enjoy. I don't know that anybody's got a better deal than I do. Writing a series of books. At this point, I think I've written more barbecue books than anybody else has. Well, except for Aiklin, but he doesn't count. He's not out of our real barbecue guys. He's
fight.
More of a grilling guy.
There's a fight.
What's that?
Nothing.
Oh, Raiklin's in his own stratosphere anyway. But,
all right.
But you know what I mean? But I'm not consciously trying to leave anything behind. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to piece together a career. But the thing is, you know, I mean, people ask me, what is my job? What do I put on a credit app? And my job is barbecue man. And, you know, there's no such career. You just kind of got to make it up as you go along. So I'm having fun, you know, and trying to make a living and make as much money as I can and try and help guide the thing in the right direction. You know, someone told me a long time ago, would you rather have a slice of a watermelon or a whole grape? And obviously, I would like to slice of the watermelon. So I like to. I've got some good friends in this business, and you know, we have a vision of this thing really going to the next level, and it's fun to be part of it. So I really like to be part of that, and if it ends up being, you know, I get some credit for it down the road, that's fine. But that's not what I'm trying to do. But as far as actually leaving a legacy for myself personally, no, heck no. I'm just glad to be part of it, and I'm having fun.
Ray Lampe is soon to be a 3-time author. He also runs a barbecue competition cooking class, and quite frankly, he's out on the road more than he is home, working for Big Green Egg, doing trade shows and the like. Ray, I certainly appreciate the time you spent with me this evening talking about all things related to barbecue. You have some great insight. Certainly appreciate your candor and honesty, and hopefully we can keep in touch and continued success in the future.
Thanks, Greg. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. So thanks again to Ray Lampe for joining us this evening. A lot of good information there. If you're interested in finding more about Ray Lampe, visit his website at www.drbbq.com. That's drbbq.com. If you'd like more information about Big Green Egg Cookers, visit their website, www.biggreenegg.com. And if you'd like to find out more about the column that Dr. Barbecue writes for at the Fiery Foods Magazine, visit their website, www.fiery-foods.com. That's FIERY-foods.com. Look for the Ask Dr. Barbecue section. Stay tuned for the Barbecue Guru spot on the backside, Jones. Guess what, folks? It's going to do it for this podcast, and I am out of here.
The future of barbecue is already here at thebarbecueguru.com. From the amazing guru that monitors and controls the temperatures of any charcoal, wood, or electric pit to the Caldera Tallboy knockdown smoker. Yes, it breaks down and stores flat, yet it's still a robust, sturdy, portable cooker and smokehouse. It also serves as an efficient temperature-controlled convection oven using wood or charcoal. The Tallboy is designed to fit all catering pans and can be used as a warming oven. You can cook in any style you choose, like ribs, chicken, jerky, vegetables, smoked cheese, whatever you want. Take it to KCBS competitions and unload it from the trunk of your car. TheBarbecueGuru.com is where you'll find the Caldera 3-Bay Caterer. It's stainless steel and uses charcoal or sterno for chafing purposes. And it doubles as a 3-bay sink or wash station with hot water and knocks down in seconds with no tools required for transportation and storage. The future of barbecue is here at TheBarbecueGuru.com. That's www.thebbqguru.com. Or call 1-800-288-GURU.